music. Won't you come down and help lead some songs? So I went down, and Dr. King and Reverend Abernathy came up from Alabama to say a few words. And I sang a few songs, and that was one of them. And Braden drove King to a speaking engagement in Kentucky the next day, and she remembers him sitting in the back seat saying, "We shall overcome. That song really sticks with you, doesn't it?" But he wasn't a song leader. It wasn't until another 3 years that Guy Carawan made it famous.
The late folk singer and activist Pete Seeger speaking in 2004. He was born 100 years ago today. You can watch that full interview and all of our interviews with Pete Seeger on our website, democracynow.org. You can also sign up for our daily email, our headlines and news alerts. Just text the word Democracy Now, one word, to 66866. That's Democracy Now, 66866. Democracy Now! Has an immediate opening for our paid full-time digital fellowship here in New York City. We also are accepting applications for paid six-month internships. Learn more at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
It is 5 o'clock p.m. Next up is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Dutch Society's 5th Annual Classical Musicians of Holland Concert, Tuesday, May 7th at 7:30 at the Old Church Concert Hall in Portland. The Classical Musicians of Holland Concert features young musicians on tour from the Netherlands performing music for violin, piano, and trombone by Debussy, Rachmaninoff, Chopin, Tchaikovsky, and Mozart. The concert is hosted by Robert McBride. Again, that's the Portland Dutch Society's 5th Annual Classical Musicians of Holland Concert, Tuesday, May 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at theoldchurch.org.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The More Who Die, The Less We Care, Confronting Genocide and the Deadly Arithmetic of Compassion, on Thursday, May 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education in Portland. The More Who Die, The Less We Care. Why does this occur? Professor Paul Slovic will discuss why people and governments ignore mass murder and genocide. His most recent work examines psychic numbing and the failure to respond to mass human tragedies. Again, that's The More Who Die, The Less We Care, on Thursday, May 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education, 724 Northwest Davis Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the DEA reports that 13.8 tons of unwanted or unused drugs were collected in Oregon and Washington.
We'll have weekly Portland City Hall coverage by KBOO's Joe Meyer.
And in international news, the 5G Telecommunication Network Conference concludes today.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 3rd, 2019. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund. Every Wednesday morning at 9:30, the Portland City Council session opens with citizen communications. The commissioners hear up to 5 citizens for up to 2 minutes each. Last Wednesday, Fritz, Wheeler, Hardesty, and Fish were present with you daily out. KBOO's Joe Meyer covers Portland City Hall and produced this report.
Last month, Lisa Wilson testified before council about the officer-involved killing of her son, Patrick Kimmins. Since then, Ms. Winston has been demonstrating outside of City Hall and calling for the release of the non-altered video of the shooting. Protesters were setting up coffee, snacks, and microphone as I headed in for Wednesday morning citizen communications. And we'll hear more of the protest in a minute.
Item 367, request of Joe Walsh to address council regarding communication. Good morning. For the record, my name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. I come before you and the city of Portland to charge the mayor and you of crimes against the people of Portland, Oregon. The sweeps that the mayor has instituted has murdered many of our people who suffer on the streets. The number is anywhere from 80 to 100 each year. Please prove me wrong by commissioning an outside study that looks at the correlation or connection between the sweeps and the deaths on the streets, including suicide. Stop going to court to get restraining orders against the cop watches. The chief of police getting a restraining order against a cop watcher is ridiculous on its face. When you give money to JOIN or the JOIN office or any other nonprofit, we demand that you order them every 3 months and come up with some evaluation for the programs. We are getting word that nonprofits are sitting on funds that could be used to get people off the streets. Please prove us wrong on this. There are many more, but your limitations on the time does its job and not allowing citizens to express their concerns or outrage in this case.
That was Joe Walsh. He estimates that between 80 and 100 citizens die on the street each year, and he holds Mayor Wheeler responsible. Mr. Walsh, also known as the Lone Vet, also called for greater openness when public money is diverted to corporate-based affordable housing. For example, are housing corporations sitting on funds which could house people today? This is especially relevant in light of State Measure 102, which further opens the public purse to corporate housing opportunity.
Item 371, request of Philip J. Wolf to address council regarding follow-up on friendly amendment proposal.
Good morning. Hello, everyone. For the public record, my name is Philip J. Wolf. Mayor, commissioners, good morning. Before I begin, I would like to request just an extra minute just in case my interpreter has any delay, please. Thank you very much. So I'm going to try and be as brief as possible. I don't feel like 2 minutes is a reasonable amount of time to get out everything I want to. I feel like many people want to, you know, be able to speak, and we're all probably feeling that same kind of pressure, balancing succinctness with truth. So I'll just get to it. The reason that I'm here is because a few years ago, I was one of the people that wrote the draft for a captioning ordinance here in the city. Commissioner Fritz took care of leadership with that and helped get it passed. It required all Portland public areas to have captioning on all of their televisions at any time. This is supposed to be at any place within Portland City Hall. Up until this moment, I've seen a lot of problems with this ordinance because it seems that it's not expansive enough, that it really covers everything that it needs. So I feel like amendments and work that we could be adding, especially now with the more prevalent use of social media, requires a lot more regulation around captioning and access. November 2018, I did send an email to all of you. And I showed up here on November 14th of 2018 to make a friendly amendment proposal. I did feel like I was heard, and Commissioner Fritz, you did say that you would accept leadership on that. And when I was finished, I said that we would be in touch via email with your office. January 7th of 2019, I sent an email. I didn't receive a response back from that. Again, I sent a response 2 weeks later. And because I didn't receive a response from that email as well, I decided to show up. And I remember someone saying, oh, Wolf, right? And this is about the captions, right? Which showed me that they had read my email, but they didn't respond. And so they told me, I'm sorry, I didn't have time to respond. And I really wasn't upset at that time. You know, I understand that we're all busy here. We have a busy life. But it's important that I feel like you communicate with people like me. I don't know if my email ended up in the trash or if it ended up in the wrong file. So that night, I followed up. And to this day, from basically, so November, December, January, February, March, April, and now today is May. So that's 7 months that I've been waiting on a reply. It's like, let's get this going, please. 7 months that I've been waiting for something like this. How long do we have to wait for accessibility? How much longer do I have to wait for this? It's a huge concern.
That was past City Hall candidate and accessibility activist Philip J. Wolf, signing through an interpreter for the hearing audience. Citizen Wolf wants to make City Hall more accessible for the hearing impaired and is dissatisfied with the way City Hall has fake communicated with him. After City Hall communications, I made it back outside in time for the press conference and protest of the police killing of Patrick Kimmons.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lisa Winston. I'm Patrick Kimmons' mother. My son was murdered September 30th of 2018, 3:49 a.m. I got the phone call. He got shot 9 times in the back while running. At the time that he was murdered, he did not have a gun in his hand or in his possession. The DA's district attorney, Rod Underhill, has released a video to the press that has been tampered with. The video has been tampered with. Patrick Kimmons' family, which me, his mother, and his brother, was the first one to see the video. The video that we've seen at the time of Patrick Kimmons' murder was a video where Patrick, the police, from the look of it, told him to put his hands up. He put his hands up immediately, and when he was running, his hands was up the whole time. Ted Wheeler, you need to get off your ass, and you need to come out here, and you need to support us too, and because you run the police force. You run the police force.
Yeah.
You don't, how dare you get on the news and talk about protesters? We're not tearing up your facility. We out here yelling for justice. You and Chief Outlaw. And it's time that you do your job. I'm sick of it. I came here trying to be a woman and talk to you. But you know what I got out of your mouth? Thanks for coming. You're horrible. Disgusting. Give up your job.
Ms. Winston. Question, please. And so, in what ways is the publicly released video different from the one you saw, ma'am?
Of my son? So the video that I've seen first before anybody seen it. The difference between the one that was released to the media is that Patrick Kimmons' hands was taken out. If your hands is up, you are not a threat to the Portland police. Period. Point blank. I don't care who you are. If your hands is up, it's hands up, don't shoot. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Well, hands up, don't shoot don't any work. That doesn't work anymore. Not with Black African Americans. Because if you grab for your ID or anything, you're getting killed right on the spot. It doesn't matter who you are. So that video that I seen, his hands was up from the start to the end. The video that's released to the press, his hands is not up at all. In the 400-page document, it truly states, Patrick Kimmons was shot 3 times while hands was raised. That tells you the truth right there. I want Rod Underhill as a district attorney to release the full video. And what I mean by releasing the full video is release the video that is true. Stop sending false information across the media.
That was Letha Winston calling for the release of the unaltered video of the officer-involved homicide of her son, Patrick Kimmons. And this has been Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
The DEA is reporting that it recently collected 13.8 tons in Oregon and Washington of unwanted or unused prescription drugs during their National Prescription Drug Takeback event. The semiannual event saw 5.4 tons of unused prescription drugs in Oregon turned in and 8.4 tons collected in Washington. 19 tons was collected from the Pacific Northwest region during the one-day event. The DEA first began the National Prescription Drug Takeback events in 2010. Since then, they've collected nearly 6,000 tons of unused prescription drugs. The aim of the campaign is to make the public aware of the misuse and abuse of prescription drugs and to give the public a safe way of disposing them. The next Take Back Day will take place on October 26th.
The Prague Security Conference on 5G networks, hosted by the Czech Republic's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, concluded today. The two-day conference was attended by dozens of government officials and cybersecurity experts from over 20 countries, including groups from NATO and the EU. The aim of the conference, as stated by the Czech Republic, was to define non-binding recommendations on how to proceed safely with the introduction of 5G networks. After 2 days of discussion, the conference produced a set of recommendations to evaluate nations based on their national, economic, and commercial security, as well as 5G vendor risks like vulnerability to influence from hostile countries. Here are some comments from the Australian delegation.
We would not all be here if we did not know that 5G represents a significant opportunity to deliver the next wave of productivity improvements and innovation across the global economy. 5G will underpin the development of widespread range of innovation across our communities. But we're also acutely aware that 5G will be more about more than just consumers. 5G will power the industrial control and safety of life systems that make our economies work. And it will also underpin our current and future critical infrastructure, including the basics of electricity and water. The far greater depth with which our society will interact with 5G networks means far greater consequences should our networks be compromised. We are all aware that the attack surface and consequently our vulnerabilities are continuing to grow with our increasingly connected society. 5G will only serve to further this growth at an exponential rate, supporting the connection of an ever-growing array of physical systems and devices with compute power. Concurrently, and in part causally, our threat environment is worsening. Malicious actors are not only growing in scale and sophistication, but becoming bolder in their activities and the targets that they choose. In this environment, government and industry must work to ensure the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of data that traverses our critical networks.
That was audio from the Prague Security Conference on 5G Networks, the Australian delegation speaking. The U.S. government is publicly showing support for the Prague proposals and the security blueprint stating, quote, "The United States government plans to use the Prague proposals as a guide to ensure our shared prosperity and security," end quote. The Trump administration has been lobbying allies for months to ban China's biggest maker of network infrastructure equipment, Huawei, from the 5G networks. And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. British Columbia's Court of Appeal has sided with the Washington State man in a decade-long tribal sovereignty case. Emily Schwing has more.
Sinaik's tribal member Rick Desitel lives on the reservation of the Confederated Tribes of the Colville in northeastern Washington. In 2009, he went elk hunting without a license and as a non-resident in British Columbia to send a message that his tribe still exists.
The only way I could see to fight non-existence was to the courts.
The last Canadian Sinaik's member died in 1956. The Canadian government declared the tribe extinct. But in the U.S., there are at least 4,000 federally recognized Sinaik's members. In 2017, Desitel was acquitted of charges related to illegal hunting. Since then, British Columbia's courts have dismissed two appeals brought by the provincial government. Desitel's attorney, Mark Underhill, says this case is a fight for the tribe's very existence.
Not being recognized and not being able to be Sinaik's, if you would, really took a toll.
The provincial government could take the case to Canada's Supreme Court in Ottawa. In the meantime, Rick Desitel and his family are planning a huge celebration on traditional Sinaik's lands in British Columbia. I'm Emily Schwing, reporting.
Events are planned across the country this weekend to honor and raise awareness of missing and murdered Indigenous women. China Locket reports on a day of awareness in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Nearly 1 year ago, the city of Rapid City proclaimed May 5th as a day of awareness for missing and murdered Native women and girls. The Red Ribbon Skirt Society has been working to draw awareness to victims. Lily Mendoza is a co-founder of the group.
We are actually at our point now in our awareness campaign where we really need to look at going beyond that and educating people in our community.
The Red Ribbon Skirt Society recently opened a permanent healing center where people can pray and remember lost ones. The space is the first of its kind and recognizes more than 70 South Dakota Indigenous women, children, and two-spirited victims. Mendoza says people from all backgrounds are invited to recognize the Day of Awareness.
What we're looking at is doing more outreach into far beyond our Native community. And so we're welcoming in spiritual leaders, clergy from all different sectors of denominations to come in and share prayer with us.
A Lakota spiritual leader is speaking in the Healing Center for the event, along with clergy members from an Episcopal church, synagogue, and person who follows Buddhism. Mendoza says they will help lead a prayer for victims, followed by a moment of silence. She says acknowledging the high number of victims is an ongoing process. The Red Ribbon Skirt Society has been working on educating the community through projects like the Y Campaign. That's a visual arts project that displays empty dresses representing missing and murdered women.
We were able to put up an exhibit at the City School Administration Building here in Rapid City, and so there is a red dress exhibit out in the lobby there.
The Day of Awareness is scheduled for Sunday. I'm China Lockett in Rapid City.
The Oglala Sioux Tribe sent a letter Thursday to South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem stating she's no longer welcome to enter the Pine Ridge Reservation because of her support of two riot-boosting bills. Tribal officials say the bills unfairly target Native Americans and their allies in efforts to keep pipelines away from treaty land. The governor's office released a statement saying Noem has spent time building relations on Pine Ridge and will continue efforts to engage with tribes. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News, stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report from Barbara Bernstein with author Bill McKibben. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather, clear, down to 47 with a slight breeze. Tomorrow, looks like we'll have a mix of clouds and sun and a high near 75. The evening's going to be clear to partly cloudy and a low of 49. Today in history, in 1926, Britain's Trade Union Congress called for the country's first ever general strike, which lasted 9 days. And in 1937, Margaret Mitchell won the Pulitzer Prize for Gone with the Wind. And the quote of the day is from the book Gone with the Wind, quote, "Death, taxes, and childbirth. There's never a convenient time for any of them."
Ilana Goldman is an activist and one of the founders of Jewish Voice for Peace at PSU. Ilana hosts radical Shabbat dinners every Friday night and would like to invite you to tonight's potluck. Here's KBOO's Tammy Hobteas talking with Ilana.
My name is Ilana Goldman. I'm a student at PSU. I'm in my fourth year, and I started a group on campus called Jewish Voice for Peace, which is like a national organization led by Jews and non-Jews alike, but mostly Jewish people, led by Jewish morals, to oppose the occupation and ethnic cleansing going on in Palestine. And so we are like a pretty big anti-Zionist organization that is led by Jewish morals, but and still like holds dear Jewish traditions, but uses those to oppose war crimes and other like horrific acts that Israel enacts on Palestinians. And so I thought it was a good way to build community in Portland, because when I first moved here, didn't find a Jewish community that I felt aligned with my values and my morals, because I knew that I'm a women's studies major, so I hold like my social, my place in this world, my morals, my ideals really close to me, and I couldn't be in a Jewish community that was either like non-political about Israel or like claimed they didn't talk about it, because that's not good enough for me. So I was like, there needs to be a space for Jews who can like, who are not Zionist, who don't feel like Israel represents them, to come and build community and build solidarity with Palestinians in Portland especially, and talk about like how we can be allies and accomplices and build like really strong communities, because ultimately we're going to be safe in this world when we're together. So, and I think a lot of Jewish communities in Portland don't have that, and so I was like, this needs to happen. And then me and my friend Zia and Sarah and Gabby, now we're all co-organizers of JVP Portland PSU. There is a JVP Portland, which is separate from us, but JVP PSU started in the fall. And then since fall 2018, we've been having monthly Shabbat dinners, which are like, we call them radical Shabbats. So every month we have a different theme, and we've had different themes like Palestine 101, getting a basic understanding of what's going on in Palestine for people who didn't understand or didn't know and wanted to get a good groundwork of where they can start. But that was our first one, and a bunch of people came. It was like families and children and people outside the PSU community, and it was really beautiful. And then we had other themes like Bye Bye Birthright, which Birthright is a free trip that Jews can take to Israel, basically to establish residency. And we talked about how we should boycott any free trip on stolen land, and how if our Palestinian friends can't go home or even get through the airport, we deny any free trip. And yeah, so we hold like different themes each month, and this theme, the one that's happening tonight, is Gaza 101. So we're going to be talking about how Gaza is the world's largest open air prison, and the Great March of Return that's been going on since March last year, and updates on that. And it's a potluck, so people bring food if they want or if they have any, and we all share food and eat and learn, and it's a really sweet learning community, I think. So I'm really glad that it exists, and we're growing stronger, which is good, which has got some people mad, but that must mean we're doing something right. So.
Oh yeah, of course. And I think that's a really important part, that when you are Jewish and you are in a Jewish community, there's a lot of emphasis on Zionism as well, which is kind of different than being Jewish. So it's really nice to see that while keeping the culture alive, there's also an emphasis on separating Zionism from Judaism. And so for your Radical Shabbat, do you get a lot of people who aren't Jewish that join?
Oh, yeah. I would say it's about half and half. Probably half the people who come aren't Jewish. Either they're Muslim or Arab, or we get a lot of like Catholic, old like Catholic hippies and stuff from the community, which I think is really cute. And yeah, I think mostly people, because the U.S. is so biased towards being pro-Israel, they only really hear news about Israel being like our ally in the Middle East, and like the only democracy in the Middle East, and like all of these things, these little catchphrases that we hear all the time. So for them to come and hear from Jews themselves speaking that we don't, we're not Zionists, and Zionism doesn't define our Judaism, and it's actually insulting to Jewish ancestry to say that like this horrible nation state defines, you know, thousands of years of our existence, when in reality Zionism is only 70 years old. So it's like, it can be a good learning experience for people to come and understand that Judaism isn't Zionism, and Zionism also is not always Jews who are leading it. So yeah,
definitely. And do you get any issue with on campus or anything from, I guess, pro-Zionists or any kind of organizations kind of opposing what you're doing?
Not any face-on, like, direct confrontation yet, which I think is kind of funny because people here are very passive. So, like, I'm definitely willing to have that confrontation. So I'm like, I'm like, hey guys, like, you want to come talk? You have all of our information is online. But mostly it's just this site called Canary Mission, which is a anti-Palestinian. Their message is that they expose racism, when in reality they're like 88% people of color, Muslim sounding names, who they like expose for anti-Semitism, but in reality it's only just anti-Zionism. They throw a few little like white supremacists in there to say that they are like exposing racists, but I'm on there, like other pro-Palestine activists are on there, and they have all your information, your job, your school, like all like pages of screenshots of things that you've said. And then actually the airport in Israel uses that site to determine whether you can get through the airport or not. Like they will search your name on there. So there's a lot of PSU profiles on that website. So
interesting.
Like, that was one of our themes for our Shabbat, was Canary Mission is canceled, because we were like talking about how the site itself is like so, it's anonymous, and it holds a power over people, because people will look at it and believe that it's true, even though it's incredibly racist and not at all what it claims to be. So we wanted to bring awareness to that too.
And have you had any kind of lashback from family members, or do you find more encouragement, and have you made new friends in your Shabbat dinners?
I think it's a cost you kind of have to pay as someone who's an anti-Zionist Jew, because Zionism is so deeply ingrained in Jewish life from birth. So most of my family supports me, but which is, I'm really lucky, because I've met people whose like entire families will disown them. But I think it's also the cost of like what kind of world we want to live in. Is it worth? Is that like pain from your family not talking to you worth like the new community and family that you'll make ultimately at the end of the road, with like the solidarity that you've built with people who are really living under siege? And I don't know, I guess the cost to me, the more important thing to me seems like making sure Palestine is free one day, and like my role in that and how I can play a part in that. And if I have a family member who is